Welcome to the realm of heroes and monsters. Storytime with your host, A.P. Fuchs. Stories of intrigue, stories of horror, stories of superheroics, stories of monsters. Get ready, the thrill ride begins. Greetings and welcome to the latest edition of the Realm of Heroes and Monsters Storytime with me, your host, A.P. Fuchs, writer, illustrator, and all-out nerd when it comes to superheroes and monsters. So, we're pretty much getting to like the very end of Season 2 here, guys. We're almost done. And you're going to hear a story shortly, and I'll talk about that in a second. But yeah, we're pretty much at the point where we're almost going to wrap it up. So, be sure to tune in for the final episode. Of course, I'm going to try to make it fun. Like last year, when we did the end of season one, I did a double story, but we were doing flash fiction back then, so it was easier to do a double story in terms of length. That's not going to be the case for this upcoming episode, or like the final episode. We're not going to do a double just because, again, the length. I don't want you guys having this 2-hour, you know, story podcast and eventually quit halfway through just because you need to do something else. So we'll try to keep it within our standard length that we've been sort of doing this season, which is ranges from approximately half an hour to an hour, depending on the length of the story. So yeah, so that's coming up real soon. And what's also cool too is the last episode, the finale, is going to have a two-part thing to the story. There's going to be the story itself, and then there's actually something that was written in relation to that story, which will be revealed after the credits of the final episode. So you want to stick around for that. So you get like a half and half. You get a full story, but then you get sort of this little compliment piece at the end. And that's how we're going to leave off season two when the time comes. So, but for those of you who have been sticking with me this season, thank you so much. Thank you for joining me. I hope you enjoyed the stories. I hope whether you had listened to season one first and then this season, or this season first and maybe you're going to go back to check out season one. I don't know. But either way, I hope that whatever stories you end up hearing, I hope you have a good time. And I hope that, you know, it fills your imagination with images and pictures and feelings and thoughts and sounds and all the rest that's supposed to come with stories. So, I mean, and that's the goal of this podcast, right, is I just want to tell you guys a story. And that's why it's called story time. So let's have story time. And we should do that right now. Let's do that now. Does that sound good? Yeah, that sounds good, right? Okay, so let's go do that. Let's have story time. So sit down, elbows on your knees if you please, crisscross applesauce, right? And let's listen to a tune. All right, see, this is now we're doing this live and we're making mistakes. Not a tune, a tale of a tale of the undead. Undead. And I'm by undead, we're not talking vampires, we're talking the undead zombies. Reflections of the Living Dead. Was it her imagination, or did Mary Sue see Daniel's face lurking beneath the surface of Big Whiteshell Lake? She looked again, peering intently to where, just a moment ago, she could have sworn she saw the face of her gorgeous ex-husband reflected in the dark water. Nothing but black water stared back. Mary Sue placed her palms beside her, leaned on them, and sat back on the dock, her feet dangling above the lake's cool surface. Above, out here, far away from the city, the stars were out in abundance, the moon a sliver of white nearly straight overhead. A part of her hated being here. A part of her, well, needed to be here. This lake was full of memories. Memories of Daniel. It was here on this very dock he proposed to her 8 years ago. It was here on this very dock they first kissed on a night similar to this one back when they were 15. It was here Daniel drowned. Mary Sue remembered the day clearly. As it was every year since they had got married, she and Daniel set up camp at their usual site not far from the dock, D7, and, as usual, Daniel got up an hour early to go for a swim, something he said that had to be done, seeing as how, being the dedicated gym-goer that he was, it was one of the best and quickest ways to get a workout while on vacation. They had been scheduled to camp for 7 days. 5 out of those 7, Daniel returned back to the campsite around 7 a.m. from his swim. On day 6, he didn't return at all. Mary Sue thought he was running late, so gave him some more time. When 7:30 rolled around and he didn't return, she rushed out of the tent and ran to the dock, hoping to simply just run into him on the way. She didn't run into him at all. When she reached the dock, Daniel was nowhere in sight. She searched up and down the adjacent shore, hoping to catch a peek of his head bobbing up and down in the water. No one was swimming that morning. She ran back to the campsite. Perhaps they had somehow missed each other. Daniel wasn't there. Back at the dock, she scanned left and right as far as her eyes could see. Nothing. Soon she found herself running up and down the gravel roads in between campsites, looking for him. Next, she was asking everyone she ran into if they saw her husband. No one did. Mary Sue went back to the dock, went back to her site, went back to the dock again. Daniel was missing. She reported his disappearance to the camp office, and the moment she informed them he had been swimming, park patrol was set on alert, lifeguards called, and the RCMP. Daniel was never found, not even after the entire bottom of the roped-off swimming area of the lake was combed through. But one thing was clear. Daniel had drowned. Now, a year later, beneath a starry sky, haunted by memory, Mary Sue relived their engagement, their first kiss, that tragic day, over and over again. "Wish you were here," she said. "I love you, Daniel. With my whole heart, and then some." She remembered his words to her, ones about what she should do should something ever happen to him. They were young enough. She was 27, and he 28. "Take time to heal, then remarry," he had said. As much as she hated to hear it, she found herself stating the same words back to him. The problem was, she was learning words and actions were two separate things, and right now, remarrying, or even the prospect of it, was the farthest thing from her mind. All she wanted was Daniel. Mary checked her watch. She had been sitting out here for an hour. She hoped that coming to the dock where her husband had passed away would somehow bring a sense of closure. Instead, all it brought was pain. She peeked over the edge and stared at the water, imagining what it must have been like for Daniel when he discovered he couldn't swim anymore and was forced to succumb to a world of watery blackness. Then she saw his face again. Mary got on all fours and crept to the edge of the dock and gazed into the water. The lake's cool black surface stared back, and, beneath it, a shimmering figure. Daniel's. Her mouth fell open and she thought she had screamed out his name but couldn't be sure. The face beneath the water stared back, eyes open, as if it recognized her. It had to be him. It just had to. The idea that his body had somehow rolled along the lake's floor and had finally surfaced enough to be seen crossed her mind, more a feeling than a thought. And a moment later, panic. Should she call for help? Would anyone in the nearby campsites hear her? Her cell phone was back at her tent. Daniel. There, beneath the water. His face rose closer to the surface. "Daniel!" she screamed, and instinctively pawed at the water. Her hand splashed at the surface, the ripples obscuring his features. When the water settled, Daniel was gone. "No!" She brought her hand back to the dock, wet skin slipping on the wood. She toppled in, head first. Water filled her nose, sending a spike of pain through her sinuses. The icy cold of the lake instantly soaked through her clothes. She thrashed about beneath the water's surface, trying to get her legs back under her. Kick, kick, swim. Kick, kick, swim. Kick, kick. Mary broke the surface, only to see her little tumble had landed her several meters from the dock. She pinched the bridge of her nose between thumb and forefinger and tried to squeeze out some of the pain. Daniel, she thought, now not so sure if what she saw was real. Slowly, she swam for the dock. No more than two strokes closer and something sharp bit into her leg, tugging her beneath the surface. She kicked herself free from whatever it was and went topside again, shrieking. What was that? Shark. As if. Though for someone who sat through numerous viewings of Jaws, it was an understandable reaction, even to herself. There were no sharks here. Teeth chattering, she said, "Get it together, Mary. Just swim in, get out, and get back to sight." She began to dog paddle back to the dock. Deep pain cut into her calf and pulled her back under. Something had her. Something with fingers, or something like them. The brief mental image of a bear flashed through her mind. They were water animals, after all. They just didn't swim underwater. Then the flash was gone. She fought against the thing's pull and circled her arms in and out in wild arcs, slowly pulling herself to the surface. Her face broke through for a second, then was pulled under again. She screamed inside. The pain in her leg grew more intense, more and more until a vibrating rip rode up her leg and settled into her stomach. Then release. She kicked to the surface. She screamed, then choked, lake water sloshing against the back of her throat. Mary screamed again. Help! Help! Somebody help! Frantically, she pulled herself across the water, so slow, as if dragging herself along the ground. She was at the dock. Her right calf was numb. Her right thigh was beginning to lose feeling. With shaky hands, she reached up and grabbed the dock at the ledge. All strength seemed to be gone from her arms. Heart racing, body shaking, she thought, "Pull!" It took everything she had, but slowly she managed to get first her chest, then her stomach, onto the dock. She reached forward, stuck her fingers in between the planks, and pulled again, dragging herself out of the water. Mary rolled over onto her side, spitting out lake water, wondering what just happened. "Help!" she squeaked. So cold. So very cold. She glanced down to her leg. Nearly all of her right calf was missing. All that was left was the shin bone, loose skin, and chunks of flesh that reminded her of hamburger meat. Blood pooled around the wound, mixing in with the water she brought with her. The strength in her right leg was gone, and the power in her left leg was quickly fading. There was no way she would be able to stand. With everything she had, she began pulling her body along the dock, not caring about anything other than simply getting away. What she'd do once she reached the end of the dock, she didn't know. "Help," she said, but the word was a mere whisper. Bits of laughter and a mosaic of voices rose from the nearby campsite behind the bushes. "Help!" Thuck, thuck, thuck. A low beat on wood. Mary pulled herself further along. Thuck, thuck. Woof. Woof. Thuck. She blinked some of the water from her eyes and gazed down the length of her body. Someone was crawling along the dock. Soaking wet, their skin gray and bloated, wrinkled and torn in little pockmarks throughout. Dark hair hung over the eyes. A blue swimsuit. "Daniel," she whispered, tears immediately filling her eyes, obscuring him from view. The figure crawled along, wheezing, coming toward her. "Daniel, please, it's me. It's Mary. It's..." He didn't seem to hear her. He just kept his eyes on the boards as he drew near, as if afraid that looking up would make him lose his balance. Mary took a deep breath. "Dan, you'll..." The shriek caught in her throat after the first syllable. The rest of his name spilled over her tongue so quietly she could barely even hear herself. Without a word, Daniel crawled over to her. He grabbed her left foot with both hands, cradled it a moment, then brought it to his mouth. Pain spiked through Mary's heel, then encompassed her whole foot as Daniel tore a chunk out of it. Blood spurted into the air in black arcs, spraying him, spraying her. He didn't seem to mind. She screamed. At least, she thought she did. Any moment now, someone would run and come to her rescue. Any moment now. Any moment. Any... No one came. Mary's heart galloped at the realization that reality was slipping away, and she didn't know if she had really called out for help or not. Daniel tore her foot and ate away the instep. Convulsing, Mary twitched and flopped on the rock. Somewhere in the back of her mind, she hoped the jerky movements would somehow shake herself free. Then, a heavy weight was upon her, and the foul stench of dead fish. Daniel's face was right next to hers. He bit into her neck and pulled away a slippery chunk of flesh, veins, and all went black. Then she was awake again, thrashing beneath him. Daniel groaned, as if savoring the flesh between his teeth, on his tongue. Bloodshot eyes bore into her. Daniel bit down on her face and tore away her nose and upper lip. Warm blood splashed her eyes and cheekbones. Skin stinging, flesh throbbing, delirium setting in. Mary couldn't help but let the moment take her. Her neck pulsed, her eyes grew heavy. The pain subsided, and euphoria filled every fiber of her being. Daniel, she thought. Gray, water-filled fingers as thick as sausages slammed down on her chest. The thing that was once her husband pushed off her, then moved to her left side and bit down on her arm. There was no pain. Not anymore. The murky green of the lake water filled Mary's vision. The strong support of mud pressed up against her back. She knew she was underwater, but that was as far as the thought went. Something bright and shiny sparkled above on the other side of the water's surface. She felt like she could gaze at it forever. So beautiful, so round, so twinkly. To touch it, just to touch it. Mary wanted to stretch out her arm and hold the gorgeous shiny ball in her hands. Hand. Hand. She glanced to the side. Her arm was gone at the shoulder. She glanced to the other side. Her bicep was cut off just above the elbow. No hand either. Stand. To stand and see the shiny ball thing. Stand. Legs. She peered down her body and in the blurry murk at the bottom of the lake. Something was missing. She stared past her groin for a long time, trying to think of what was supposed to be there. The word, words, escaped her. Shiny ball, pretty, far, away, forever. She couldn't move. She didn't care. Shiny ball. Welcome to the story behind the story segment. So here we are. So that story came from this anthology that I was a part of called Dead Worlds, Undead Stories, a zombie anthology, and it was edited by Anthony Gian Gregorio. Tony and I were friends way back in the day, and we still are. We just don't keep in touch as much as we used to, but we're still on great terms and all the rest. But yeah, I wrote that story because I wanted to try the idea of writing a zombie story with minimal zombie, but still make it a zombie story, if that makes sense. So it was sort of the attempt was to create the, let's call it the zombie atmosphere, but without the zombie until maybe later, right? And there's horror movies, like zombie movies that have that kind of thing too, where you don't see them for a long time, but that vibe is on the air, right? And you can tell with the characters and the circumstances and the dialogue and whatever that, you know, something's out there, something confusing we don't understand. And then sure enough, somewhere down the line in the show or the book or wherever, then the monster shows up. And then you realize, oh, that's what that atmosphere was about. So my hope with that story, I don't know if I succeeded or not, was to create that sort of thick, undead atmosphere for the majority of the story before we got into the sort of the horror aspects of the, you know, the gore and the zombies and, you know, the blood and guts and all that stuff. So that was kind of the goal with that. But what was neat about the story is I ended up taking it years later, when the third installment of my Undead World trilogy came out called Redemption of the Dead. And as part of a thing for Comic-Con, I created a zombie survival pack. So I had the trilogy in there, and I had like a list of like essential like supplies, you know, should a zombie apocalypse happen. It came with like a cap gun. It came with a mini deck of cards because you need cards to pass the time when you're, you know, hiding out from zombies. And the bonus though is if you bought this set, I mean, not only did you get those little goodies, you know, as extra, because I didn't charge extra for those. It was purely for the books. You got an exclusive chapbook, homemade, printed at home out of the printer, folded, formatted, etc., put together by hand with that story. So Reflections of the Living Dead was the story that I gave away free if you bought the entire set for the Undead World trilogy. So it's sort of like a collector's item story in that context. Yes, it's in that anthology, but there is here in the studio maybe a handful of those chapbooks left, so like very rare. I'm not going to make any more because it was a lot of work to try to put these things together to, and get the thing right in terms of reading left to right and folding it and not making a stack of pages that look cheap. And I mean, for those who are new to the publishing world, okay, I want to introduce you to something called chapbooks. Okay, these don't really happen much nowadays. It's common in poetry circles, but not so much in fiction circles. But back in the good old small press days, again, before this whole digital publishing boom, chapbooks were a thing. And I actually made one for Magic Man. I made a deluxe chapbook called Magic Man, and it was his story. But I did it in really nice format in terms of paperback and that sort of stuff, because I kind of wanted to one-up the chapbooks that were currently out there. But chapbooks were basically that. It was a short story, you know, whatever, 4,000 to 6,000 words. And just that's all it was. And it was just a really thin book. Kind of looked like a greeting card but with pages. Like that's kind of how the format style was. And they're very popular. I mean, it was a way to get a story to a reader and see if they never read your stuff. It's a cheap way for them to like try it. And if they like you, then, you know, you hope that they will go for your longer works. So it was a good tool at the time. And, you know, I've been considering like doing something similar for a couple things going forward. But again, down the line, I got other things on the burner at the moment. So, yeah. But anyway, that's the story behind the story. It was originally done for this anthology, and then I turned it into a chapbook. And yeah, now we have some people out there with a sort of a collector's item from buying that zombie trilogy set of the Undead World trilogy. So thank you to those who did get that set, and I hope you enjoyed the cap gun. But anyway, that's pretty much wraps this part up. So let's get on with the credits. But after the credits, we will do a after the credits thing, because that's what we do. So ready? Credits. Thanks for sticking around to after the credits. So this one is actually a little PSA to any guy or girl out there listening to this who is a collector of whatever you might collect, you know, whether it's toys or, you know, Hot Wheels or books or comics or whatever, right? So here's a little thing that you should consider. If you're an online shopper for your collectible of choice, here's an idea, okay? Go to wherever you go, whatever venue that you purchase from, okay, and shop as if there is no money ceiling, like, right, and pretend you have infinite cash and you can get whatever you want, okay? And what you do is you put this in your cart, that in your cart, this in your cart, that in your cart, and you end up having a cart that's worth like $1,000, right? And of course we're not going to spend that, but what we did do is we took out our items of interest and then leave them in the cart. Right, leave them there. Don't buy it just yet. Leave it unless it's an extreme sale and you must get something out of that cart. That's a different scenario. But generally speaking, right, if stuff is at more or less retail, throw it in the cart, leave it there. And then next time when you do your online shopping, review your cart, right? And what you're going to find is all the stuff that you kind of picked on impulse, you're going to get rid of, right? So then therefore, one, you saved yourself some money because you didn't do an impulse buy. And then two, what's common with online retailers is, I mean, this has been my personal experience, so I can't speak for every single outlet, but as per my personal experience, with places like Amazon and stuff, the items that are in your cart, if they kind of stay in there for a good while, they get discounted. And I suspect it's maybe an algorithm thing, to basically get you to buy to get it out of your cart. So because you're going to want that thing anyway, and if you're not like an impatient person, wait for the sale. Wait for the price to drop a little bit. Whether it's by a couple of bucks or a lot of bucks, it doesn't matter. It's savings, right? And that's how a way to go about your collecting hobby, and save money. Because we all know as collectors, the collector's bug is strong. The urge to get to your item of interest is there. I mean, it's a thing. And this is one way to sort of help the wallet out is to, load up the cart, get rid of the impulse buys, and wait for some savings. So that's my little tip to the collectors out there. Try that method. See if that works for you. If it does, great. If it doesn't, that's okay too. But it's an effort to help you save a few bucks so that maybe you could put it towards that thing you really want, like that bigger item that's like, ah, I have to have it, like, the original Castle Grayskull, for example. Or in general, save that money, put it aside, and grow it in some account because you're going to need it one day at some point anyway. And you might as well put the savings there to grow for future you, right? Because remember the principle of life, present you helping future you. That should be part of our daily routine. Current you helping future you in some way at least once every day. Because then your future you, when you finally get to that point in the timeline, will thank past you for doing that assistance. So that's my little PSA regarding collectibles and also you helping you. So see you next episode. Season two is now starting to draw to a close. Uh-oh. Curtains are starting to come down. Okay, I gotta go. Bye.